Cross One. Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, they raised a number of issues. Limpopo, for instance, that the bill must face sections of the Public Service Act that are fact-checked and amended. The definition of employee is not broad enough. Eastern Cape indicated that the family member is defined but not used in the bill. Definition of employee excludes the person appointed in terms of Section 12A of the Public Service Act and those acting in the same capacity in municipalities. That is where they were talking about the area where we put the definition in clause 8 and 9. However, they say under clause 8.1, it includes these categories of employees, and that this will cause interpretation problems as it appears to contradict the definition clause 1. And Mpumalanga indicated that we need to insert the definition of organ of state with reference to clause 8 and 9. Organ of state means an organ of state as defined in section 239 of the Constitution. And also the issue of the definition of head of institution to be inserted. I'll just start with the responses regarding the Limpopo input. The schedule actually indicate which sections should be repealed in the Public Service Act, and we say Section 4, 14 and 15 should be repealed. So in our view, there's no need for that amendment to be effected. The definition of employee, we believe it's comprehensive enough in that it refers to all employees appointed in public administration, which is defined in the bill. So also that one, our view is that the amendment is not necessary. The Eastern Cape on the issue of family member defined but not used, clause 9 refers to the term family member. If you go to clause 9 when it comes to the issue of disclosure of financial interest, that's where the family member is used. So we don't believe that it's necessary to have an amendment. On the issue about the confusing nature of the definition, which is in clause 1, but we change it in clause 8 and 9. The inclusion of Section 12A Public Service Act presence is only for purposes of clause 8 and 9. And such distinction, we believe, is allowed, and our state law advisors confirm that it's allowed in terms of legislative drafting. That's why we excluded them in clause 1, but we include them in clause 8 and 9. The issue referred to by Mpumalanga on the organs of state, with reference to clause 8 and 9, we believe that if we insert the definition of organ of state, it will basically limit the scope of clause 8 and 9. There are state institutions that are not necessarily organs of state, such as the courts are not organs of state, but they are part of the state. So we don't believe that there's any need to amend that. It was deliberate why we used the term state instead of organ of state. Regarding the head of institution, that the definition should be inserted, we have defined the word institution in the bill. And when reference is made to the head of the institution, it's means the head of that institution, as defined in clause one. So we don't believe that there's need for that, because that will be clear when one reads the institution definition, and when you insert head, then it would need the head of those institutions, which means the department, government components, and the municipality. Then the next part is on clause 2, that there were inputs in terms of inclusion of public entities. Our position in that one is that the scope of the bill only applies to the administration of the three spheres of government. There is a presidential review commission that is looking into the state of state-owned enterprises, which has been finalized, but we haven't got the final report on that. So that report will actually influence the decision in terms of whether we include state-owned enterprises or not. And we thought that bringing the state-owned enterprises at this point, they were not ready to bring those the state-owned enterprises at this point. Although the point that is raised is valid, we would like to consider that in line with the state-owned enterprises, that report that has been done by the president. Clause 5, the comments that say there must be an independent body in every department to deal with transfers. We are saying that that proposal is not acceptable, as the regulatory framework that we already have in place in terms of the Municipal Systems Act and the Public Service Act, and the institutions that we have, such as the Public Service Commission, perform this oversight role. So there's no need to add that. It would just be a duplication of what they are supposed to do. Still on clause 5, incorporating heading, there must be a dispute resolution mechanism and appeal process related to transfers and secondments. We submit that there are mechanisms in place to address disputes with regard to secondments. Note that no disputes will flow from transfer, as transfer can only be affected with the consent of the employee. So the employee, if the employee doesn't consent when it comes to transfers, then the transfer is not going to take place. When it comes to secondment, we are saying that the right in terms of the Labor Relations Act for an employee to lodge a dispute or to submit a grievance is still applicable in this case. They can still exercise that right in terms of the Labor Relations Act. So there is no need, in our view, that we should amend this clause. The other issue that is raised by Limpopo is conditions of service. They made a comment that conditions of service across three spheres not the same, and the bill must take that into account. The bill provides for the executive authority of transferring and recipient institutions to concur with the transfer and to agree on the remuneration and conditions of service. So it's provided for in the bill as it states, because we have taken into consideration those differences. Therefore, we don't believe that it's necessary to effect an amendment. The bill must ensure that mechanisms of transfer and secondment is not abused. Transfer can only be affected with the consent of the employee. For secondment, the employee must have the necessary skill and knowledge for the intended position, and the relevant executive authority must agree. If the employee does not consent to the secondment or his or her representative, to the secondment, his or her representation must be considered before the secondment is implemented. So it's not like it's just when determining whether there was fairness in that decision, they will look in terms of the submission, whether the employer applied their mind to the submission of the employee or not. And I think the FAJA will apply in this case, which the employee can actually look into, use that, and they can, as I indicated, that they can also lodge a grievance, which will be addressed. Employees so transferred must be suitably qualified. Clause 5.2b already provide for this. So we don't believe that there's any need for us to amend clause 5. Then the next one is on clause 6, where we got input from KZN and the Free State, and their input was, the KZN and Free State, their input was very similar. Secondment to be effected with consent and justifiable circumstances under which a secondment can take place must be spelled out. And Limpopo also says the bill must provide for incentives where employees transfer the secondment. We submit that this clause has built-in checks and balances in respect of secondments. For instance, clause 6, 3, and 4 provide that if an employee of an institution is seconded to another institution, there must be consultation between the relevant executive authority of the transferring and recipient institution. If the employee is seconded between a national or a provincial institution and a municipal institution, or from one provincial or municipal institution to another provincial or municipal institution, the remuneration and conditions of service of the employee upon the secondment are as agreed upon between the executive authorities of the transferring and recipient institution. It is also evident from clause 6.4a of the bill that a secondment will be as agreed between relevant executive authorities and not imposed on the institution. So we believe that there is no need to amend clause 6. Clause 7, Gauteng made an input that clause 7 should be amended to include reference to section 137 and 136 of the Constitution. We accept the proposal because it's in line with the constitutional provision, which gives similar powers to the Premier and MECs with regard to transfer or assignment of function, and therefore we accept that amendment should be effected. Clause 8, KZN and Mpumalanga, they are indicating that we need to expand on the issue of the financial interest of the employee. But an employee may not be a direct 8.2b, there are things that we need to amend and indicate that an employee may not be a director of a public or private company or have a controlling interest as a member, shareholder, or otherwise in an entity, or have any interest of 10% or more as a member, shareholder, or otherwise in an entity, have either directly or through a third party a controlling interest in any entity have either directly or through a third party any interest of 10% or more in any entity conducting business with the state. We are of the view that the expansion of Pros A to B to include shareholding and percentage of shares will infringe the rights of citizens as provided for in Section 22 of the Constitution, which provides that every citizen has the right to choose their trade, occupation, or profession freely. The reason why this clause is limited to directorship is to allow public servants to own shares in private businesses as long as they are not involved in the management and decision-making process of the company. So we might find constitutional challenges if we actually extend this. For example, issue that can come in mind, you'll find that you have there's a family business that as a family member you have shares in that, but you're not involved in the decision-making process, or you're not a director in that company, then we believe that it will be unconstitutional to restrict those public servants to have shares in those institutions. There is also a proposal which to insert new clause 8.4, which reads as follows: a contract concluded in contravention of subsection 2 may be cancelled at the option of the state. We believe that this is a good proposal that we want to be considered, that the committee can consider amending this part and insert 8.4. There is also a comment still on clause 8. To say Section 30 and 31 of the Public Service Act must be deleted. These sections, they deal with outside remunerative work by public servants. Section 30 of the Public Service Act is dealing with outside remunerative work, and 31 deals with recovery of monies received for services rendered where no prior approval of the executive authority was obtained to perform outside remunerative work. We are of the view that these sections remain relevant and should be retained. There's no bearing on clause 8 at all. So we don't believe that there's a need for an amendment on that one. The other issue that Limpopo raised is on prohibition of doing business with the state should not apply to lower income employees. It is submitted here that the exclusion of lower paid employees will defeat the purpose of the clause, which is aimed at preventing and keeping corruption. It's not only senior managers and highly paid employees who are doing business with the state, and the reports of the Auditor General to that. But the majority of the employees who are doing business with the state are actually not senior managers or highly paid public servants. Therefore, we don't believe that it's necessary to distinguish between high earners and low earners, that everyone should be included. prohibition to do business with the state to be limited to the departments of relevance of the employee. This is the same as the above, because when you are in the public service, you have influence and insight information through your colleagues. So we believe that we shouldn't amend that clause. Extend the prohibition to political office bearers, and this was also raised by the Free State. This bill only applies to employees in the public administration, consisting of national, provincial, and local governments. It's submitted that the political office bearers fall outside as they are regulated by their own legislation, and we believe that that's an issue that needs to be considered by Parliament. So, therefore, we don't agree with the proposed amendment. Proposal that the word fines, as stated in 8.3a, must be explicit. This aspect, we believe is covered under the Adjustments of Fines Act, and therefore there's no need for an amendment. The Eastern Cape proposed that we should amend clause 8.3 and replace the word guilty with the word liable. We disagree, as the wording used is found guilty and not guilty. It is submitted that the word found presupposes that due process must be followed. Clause 9 we got proposals from KZN, from Limpopo, and from Free State. KZN says an employee must, in the prescribed manner, at least annually and within 30 days of discovering or acquiring a financial interest, disclose to the relevant head of institution all his or her financial interests. And we believe that this issue it should be addressed in the regulations. Matters regulating when or how financial interest must be disclosed will be provided for in the regulation. Instead of having details in the legislation, the regulation can actually address that. The next point is the inclusion of a dependent child or any other person who is either wholly or partially dependent on the employee for financial support, including shareholding, company directorship, and partnership. The department submits that submits that the inclusion is too broad. And if you have somebody who is dependent on you, then it means that they don't have any financial means. So we don't see why should you bring somebody who is wholly dependent on you to be included. Proposal 9.2 to be amended to include the word serious misconduct. We believe that the sanction will be pronounced by the chairperson of the hearing. It is submitted that the seriousness of failure to comply is not the same as that under history. The issue of doing business with the state, we believe, is very serious. That's why we even talk about an offense. But this one, it's relative. If somebody hasn't disclosed their financial interest, each case must be decided on its merit, and we cannot now prescribe that it's serious. Clause 9 is the issue about extending this clause to state-owned entities. I've already indicated in clause 1 that we don't believe we are ready to extend this to the state-owned entities and public entities. Therefore, we don't believe that it's necessary to amend that at this point, but it's something that can be considered in future. Limpopo proposed that the disclosure of financial interest be made every 5 years. The period of the frequency of disclosure will be prescribed in the regulation. But however, The five-year proposal will actually defeat the purpose of the clause, as the state must detect conflict of interest as and when it arises. So it will be something that in the regulation we look into that, but 5 years, we don't think it's a good one. Therefore, we don't see any need for amendments. Proposal to delete the disclosure of financial interests of spouse. We believe that it defeats the purpose of the bill, which is aimed at preventing and keeping corruption, because people hide their interests under their spouses. But the expectation is that you disclose what you know. What you don't know, you don't disclose. And we also believe that it's actually to protect our employees when they have that opportunity that they disclose. So we don't believe that there's need for an amendment on that to delete the disclosure of financial interests of the spouse. Will there be a requirement? These were the questions, some of the questions that were asked. Will there be a requirement to disclose any stipend received? Will disclosure stop corruption? And our position is that when you disclose, benefits will include the stipend, if you're getting any stipend from any institution that maybe you are at. Trustee or a board member. Therefore, we don't think there's any need to amend this. Will disclosure stop corruption? Our view is that it should, or at least it will cap it. And coupled with the prohibition of public servants from doing business with the state, we believe we have a better weapon to deal with it. The Free State proposes that financial disclosure should be limited to senior managers only. We believe that this will defeat the purpose, as it's not only senior managers that do business with the state, but all employees. Clause 10, the case that and proposal also included some of the stuff that came from SALGA. So they put it as part of their submission. One of the issues that was raised under Clause 10 is that SALGA requested that directives issued with regard to training at local government level must be done in consultation with them. The bill provides that the minister must consult organized local government, and organized local government in this case is SALGA. We didn't want to put in SALGA there because next year the name might change to something else, and it means that we have to amend the legislation. Consultation refers generally to the act or discussion of seeking opinion or advice. The consultation will ensure that all parties to the consultation put forward their views and engage each other in order to reach agreements, whereas in concurrence with organized local government will require an agreement and not an engagement on the issue. This is a less cumbersome process because the parties that are required to concur do not necessarily have to engage on issues and together reach an agreement. We are therefore the view that after consult are the proper way in this regard, and therefore we don't believe it's necessary to effect an amendment on that clause. Clause 11, Limpopo, it raised the question whether the National School of Government renders other institutions of higher learning useless. Not, it doesn't. The National School of Government will focus on job training, practical aspects as opposed to academic training that one receives at institutions of learning. And even in corporate, this practice is there where you have an Anglo-American will have their own training institution. You have those things. So it's not unique, but the universities still exist, and there will be collaboration with the universities. And what the difference between this National School of Government is that we will have lecturers who are employed by the state instead of what the model that we use where Palama gets consultants or people from the university to do the training. It will be people who have got experience in public administration, retired public servants, serving public servants who are specialists in their own field. Parliamentarians, if we are teaching issues about legislative issues and so on, those are the people who will use, people who know how this system of government works, rather than having people who don't understand the public service, how it works. And there's been a number of cases wherein those consultants, they end up not preparing and come to the Palama programs, and they just read what is in the file without providing any practical issues, which has made a lot of senior managers in the public service unhappy with the training that is provided. There is also a proposal to define the National School of Government, and we believe Section 11.1 state what the National School of Government is all about. Therefore, we don't believe on Clause 11 there is need for an amendment. On Clause 13, the input from KZM, which was sponsored by SALGA, who requested that compulsory educational requirements must be determined in consultation with them. And we believe that this issue, it's similar to the issue raised under Clause 10. When dealing with regulation, reference must be made to the National Treasury Minimum Competency Regulation. So we will take that into consideration, the National Minimum Competency Regulation of National Treasury. No provision is made for professional bodies. The professional bodies are regulated in terms of their own regulatory framework, and this one have no intention to bring the professional bodies on board. Our focus is on the public administration. Under Clause 15, we got inputs from KZN and Gauteng, and KZN proposed that the organizational form of the unit must be held within the Act and not the regulation. Our response is that the establishment of the unit and corporate form it is to take will be regulated by the relevant legislation. If the minister believes that we can establish it in terms of the PFMA, she can do so in terms of the PFMA, in terms of the Public Service Act, or in terms of Company Act. However, if mandates will be as contained in Clause 15.4 of the bill. So we don't want to limit that. KZN also proposes that Clause 15.7 must state that the unit must obtain concurrence of the relevant executive authorities. Clause 15.7 already states that the unit must perform its function in respect of municipality with concurrence of municipal council. It is submitted that the word must obtain concurrence and with concurrence carry the same meaning, and therefore we don't see any need to amend that clause. There's also a comment which says it appears that the unit will develop norms and standards additional to those prescribed by the minister. our position is that it is only the Minister of Public Service and Administration that prescribes norms and standards. The unit will develop norms and standards and make recommendations for the minister to provide, to prescribe. So it's in one of their responsibilities, they will see that, oh, in this area, if we want to tighten, we need norms and standards, and they will recommend to the minister. So it won't be the responsibility of the unit to prescribe those. Housing proposes that clause 15.4D gives the public administration ethics, integrity and disciplinary technical assistance units the power to intervene where systemic weaknesses in the management of ethics, integrity and discipline management are experienced. The intervention referred to in clause 15.4D is not what is envisaged in section 100 and 139 of the constitution, because their comment actually was saying that this is it should only be applicable in that case. This is in a different. They intervene even when there is no section 100 and 139 intervention in terms of the constitution. Clause 16, KZN says the norms and standards for local government should be prescribed in concurrence with the minister responsible for local government. Clause 16.2 provides that, our position is that clause 16.2 provides that the minister must prescribe minimum norms and standards in terms of subsection 1A in consultation with the minister responsible for local government and after consultation with organized local government, which admits that this proposal is already covered in clause 16.2. And therefore, we don't believe there's any need to amend that. Raised the concern that intergovernmental relations are a contested area. Our submission is that the issue of intergovernmental relations and the overstepping of mandates are well addressed in the bill, as the MPSA must exercise its or her powers in consultation with the relevant executive authority, and therefore there's no need for us to amend that. Clause 17, KZN proposes that the organizational form of the Office of Standards and Compliance must be spelled out in the bill. This is related to the issue raised in terms of the units. The establishment of the Office of Standards and Compliance, the corporate form will be regulated in terms of the applicable legislation. I've already indicated when it came to the technical assistance unit that the minister can decide whether it's the PSMA, the Public Service Act, or the Companies Act. So also in the Office of Standards and Compliance, it will be the same. Therefore, we don't believe that we should amend this. I just want to apologize that we made a mistake and refer to the unit in our position. We are talking the Office of Standards and Compliance. Just that it's the same as the issue that we have already addressed. Housing says that the establishment of the Office of Standards might have financial implications for the provinces. Our view is that the establishment of the Office of Standards will not have any financial implication for the provinces. The Office of Standards and Compliance is established at the national sphere and not at the provincial level. Housing also proposed that the directives issued in accordance with Clause 17.6 must respect the 1760s. So be. Must be. The directives must respect the authority, role, and status of institutions at the different spheres of government. The Office of Standards and Compliance has no authority to issue directives. Only the MPSA has the authority to do so. The direction referred to in clause 17.6b is providing steps to be taken by the head of the institution. Instead of just going there and you say, we recommend you do the following, you say the following must be done in a more stronger way, so that if it's not done, then when the executive authority come to ask why it was not done, then there won't be any question that it was just a recommendation, it's flexibility. Clause 18, which will be the last clause in terms of the inputs. KZN says the regulations affecting local government must be done in conference with the minister responsible for local government and organized local government. And Gauteng also come and say consultation under 18.2 should include MECs responsible for local government. In response to the KZN input, we believe that comments is covered under clause 18.2, and therefore there's no need for an amendment. With regard to the Gauteng input, our position is that the Minister of Public Service and Administration is compelled to consult minister responsible for local government, where local government is affected. The minister responsible for local government must, in terms of IGR framework act, get input from the relevant MECs. And therefore, we believe that it's not necessary to effect those amendments. I just want to raise the two issues that came from Northern Cape. They raised the question whether the National School of Government is going to also include people who are outside the public service. Will they be trained in the National School of Government? The School of Government will only be responsible for those who are in public administration. But the practice that we have now in terms of what Parliament is doing, it's also works with Parliament in terms of the development of the members of Parliament. That practice will, we believe, will continue. But outside people who are not in public administration, those who are not in government or in the state, we don't believe that the National School will cover them. They have to go into the other public institutions. The Northwest, the issue that they raised was the Office of Standards and Compliance. They said the Public Service Commission in the province indicated that there will be conflict or duplication of roles between the Office of Standards and Compliance and the Public Service Commission. We believe that that won't happen. The Office of Standards and Compliance will actually complement whatever the Public Service Commission does. Because currently what happens is the Public Service Commission come, they do a report, and they have their own plan of action in terms of what will they focus each year. Then they will do a report, they come, they present the report to Parliament. And the executive, whether the executive implements that or not, it becomes a problem. And they've raised this issue many times, that we feel that our directions are not carried out. So this is going to be the Office of Standards and Compliance will be the institution that makes sure that the reports of the Public Service Commission are implemented. And they will proactively go to institutions and evaluate them in terms of whether they are implementing our the norms and standards and our directives and regulations properly. And they will make sure that that is happening. So it will be proactive, complementing what the Public Service Commission is doing, and also implementing some of the recommendations from the Auditor General. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much. Can we have our parliamentary legal people to make an input in as far as this particular piece is concerned?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Chair, I followed the presentation by the department here this morning in respect of the bill. Obviously, having also received this document for the first time as members, I can find no objection to the department's response. I think that having considered the mandates that have come in from provinces last week, the department has captured my thoughts that I had in preparation for this committee as well. So I do think that the response by the department is legally sound. Obviously, there are issues that affect the policy issues of the bill for the department to respond on. That's beyond the parameters of law. But I am this morning, I can find no objections legally to the presentation this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, are there any questions of clarity that you want from the department and our legal people? Are there any issues? Honorable Louis?
Beg your indulgence, Chair. I think on our presentation at KZN somewhere, I think the presenter was nowhere, they gave us an answer that says they think that matter should be, we think that the matter should be dealt, I think it was 9, if not 8, actually. And to call and come back as my picture to the chair. So in a way they say that the regulations must be that where we are saying that our proposal that these things must be included here, they are saying that they think that should go to the regulation. The issue there, Chase, I think is a matter of in what I've heard the comments made, is a matter of preference in my vote, it is not motivating enough why they want it done in the regulation. The picture, I can't direct at this point that I hope the presenter will assist. I think it is close 8 or 9, where we read, but maybe if you can say a little bit more than saying we prefer, that the matter be dealt with the regulations, maybe it will assist us to understand better. Well, in explaining even back as we to the legislature, why some of these things are rejected, because it's quite important that we will have to give feedback if some of the proposals aren't taken in. Thank you, Chair.
Are there any other issues that members want to raise? Questions of clarity?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we have Member Nessie?
I think there's the same clause where I've listened carefully and I understood because he's talking about constitutional rights. One more time, I'm not sure because where you're talking about doing business. Where KZN and Bukalaga were proposing that members of the department offices, they must not be the directors in public or private. Now, what I don't understand, here we're saying all what is being attempted by the daily to make sure that we control corruption and other things that are happening. Now, I'm just that I understand conflicts are right, but I just want to serve, to be clear once more. I'm not sure what I didn't hear properly, but I'm trying to balance the constitutional right and the corruption that you are attempting to fight with the bill. Why would he, for an example, if as for the private company, I'm a member of, I'm working in the department and I'm in the private company. As you know, I mean, people, they do have ways of getting at the back in the government department. So, if you are going to consider that, there are rights more than what you want to deal with whilst the person is in the department. I'm just trying to think that has been allowed, I mean, because I suspect there's something that I'm missing here which I can't understand. But even if I didn't today, maybe I'm going to read and understand and come back next week there. But I want us to be clear. Why would we seriously look at the constitutional rights of individuals instead of the corruption that we're attempting to deal with here? Thank you, sir.
Are there any other issues you want to raise? Can anyone from the department respond? We must also understand that we are not negotiating today. We are just getting a response from the department.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, I've got colleagues here who actually can assist me. But maybe on the first issue, and they will add, where I just want to make sure it's on clause 9, where KZN indicated that an employee must, in a prescribed manner, that's 9, at least annually and within 30 days of discovering or acquiring financial interest, disclose to the relevant head of institution all his or her financial interest. That's the one. Our preference, maybe I might have used, our preference would be this issue be dealt with in the regulations, that it shouldn't be prescribed here. Because there's also administrative issues that we need to take into consideration. If we're paying every 30 days, we have the capacity to look into this. If people can, they do it, maybe every 6 months you find this number of these amendments that come. Well, we have the administrative capacity to deal with it. So when we consider the regulations, we will also take those things into consideration. It is our preference that it shouldn't be in the bill itself. But it's a valid input that is there. But we would like it to. We prefer it to be in the regulation. I think the issue that the honourable member has raised, I just want to make sure it's on cross the one for KZN and in Mpumalanga. It's cross A to B that they are proposing that we amend and go in terms of including controlling interest as a member, shareholder, or otherwise. I gave an example of you grow up in a family which has got a business, and you have got a stake in that business by the mere fact that you were born in that family, and you happen to be a public servant. So that, if you extend this, maybe you have a controlling stake. You happen to be a public servant. So it means that you have to resign your position as a public servant. That's what that amendment will mean. There are cases wherein people, they come back to the public service because there's a specific skill that you need, and you say, make sure that your business interests are put in some blind trust we don't want you to be a director of that institution. And there are ways of managing that, that you have an arm's length involvement in that business. That those people, they can be allowed to do that. But if they are directors and they're involved in decision making in that institution, if you are a director, that's when we say, no, you cannot be required to work in the public service. That's the distinction that we are making. I just want my colleagues, if they want to add on that, to add. I've got Advocate Mlaotsi.
Is there any addition? Can we have our legal people doing that?
Thank you, Chair. Also, particularly in respect of Clause 8.2, which the Honourable Member raised in the sense of the prohibition against being a director or holding shares in the company, we must be mindful that what the clause does is not place a blanket prohibition. It's only in respect of companies conducting business with the state. If we look at A2B, it says an employee may not be a director of a public or private company, and then the emphasis should be conducting business with the state. So if you are a director or a director of a public or private company, but that company is not doing business with the state, then this prohibition doesn't apply. So if you have your family business scenario, let's assume I was born into a very prosperous family, own wine farm, and that company is not doing business with the state, I would then still have shares and hold whatever positions in that family business because it's not conducting business with the state. But the minute there's a decision to conduct business with the state and I work for government, then I should start looking at my position, because then that conflict will arise and then there will be a breach of A2B. But as long as that company does not do business with the state, I would be entitled to hold to her shareholding, would be a director, and there would be no constitutional breach in that respect. Also, if we look at the greater ambit and objective of this bill in trying to end corruption, we must remember that that is essentially the purpose. So if we are asking whether or not we're limiting constitutional rights, we have to ask ourselves whether that limitation is justifiable in an open and democratic society. And if this justification is such that we are limiting or trying to stop corruption applicable equally to all public service employees, then the justifiable could possibly stand constitutional muster. And for that respect, we are not limiting. It's only in respect of doing business with the state where that limitation applies. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Can we have a redraft of the bill? Because there are areas where the department agrees with proposals made by provinces, you know, so that we then have a bill version that must go back to the provinces for provinces to make their final mandate on this particular bill. We'll also ask that our legal team re-look at the bill, look at the faults before we move forward and deal with this particular bill, so that an input is made in the next meeting by our legal team and the department, so that provinces can then come back and deal with the final mandate, so that we, if we agree and pass the bill, can move forward. Remember, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you, members. We still have another meeting, that is the Security Committee meeting that is continuing. Please, all members of this particular committee, including me, coming here.